Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you all with us. It is a Monday morning. In fact, it's the 6th of May, 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and we welcome you to join us. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'd love to hear from you. Let me introduce the panel, and we'll get to our stories this morning. We have Libby Post with us. She is a political consultant, a dear friend, a Monday regular. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here.
Thank
also you. Joining us is Barry Lewis, the executive editor of the Times Herald Record in Middletown, New York.
A stone's throw away from Otisville.
And you
is
you
that
made
right?
It, yes, it
really
is.
A stone's throw?
Well, maybe you have to have a really good arm. But,
no, we should tell everybody.
And a very small stone.
The stone may eventually make it up.
You should tell everybody why Otisville figures in the news this morning.
Because Otisville Correctional Facility, the federal facility there, will be having a new guest joining them for at least 1.5 to 3 years, and that'll be Michael Cohen.
Is Otisville sort of club fed?
You know, it is, but, you know, as somebody who's visited prisons and stuff, I think anytime somebody forces you when to do things and when you hear gates close and cells close and, you know, you just can't leave or do what you want at the end of the day, particularly for some of those folks who are probably used to some of the great luxuries of life, I don't know how much of a club fed it is.
It's not
Attica, but it's still a correctional facility, and you just can't
leave
when you want. They do have microwaves.
And
they can text, apparently.
And they can text, and they also have gym equipment.
Yes. As do most prisons do these days.
No,
as
I know.
Well,
I'm
so,
just
but,
saying.
Yes.
And then Dean Skelos is in this facility.
Dean Skelos is there, and Joe Prococo is there.
Mike, the situation, whatever his last name is.
So you've got the situation, and you've got the fixer. And you got Prococo, who wasn't he the ZD? So there's a, I think, and I'm sure Skelos must have a some sort of nickname.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. The
Quaff.
The corrupt politician. But
the Quaff.
You know,
correct.
The Quaff. Right. So I think they all get together on Thursday nights and they'll play Mahjong and things like that. It should be fun.
Do you think there's a? Do you think there's a sort of a, you know, a I don't know how to put this, but a hierarchy. In other words, the more famous you are, the more you're in the club.
Well, I think probably it would be interesting because I assume whoever was there first. Did Skelos got there first of that group?
First. Yeah.
You know, so you know, you think you're the top, you know, top banana, and then somebody comes along, and you know, I'm sure the situation, who was a big star,
yeah, he was there first.
He was, you know, he thinks he's the big guy. Now, you know, you're Michael Cohen, and you know, you were.
Well,
the president's
Trump,
face,
the,
yeah.
The president's here, for goodness sake.
Yeah, so he has to be.
But he's not getting pardoned, but he is going to get out in less than 3 years, obviously. Good
if he
behavior.
Does, if, right, yeah, I would think.
Be out in a year, probably.
With good behavior. I don't expect. No, I. About the last person on the planet who anybody would ever expect to be pardoned would be Michael Cohen.
Right
I
now.
Think,
yeah.
right, at right. this point. And at this point, I don't see why.
Unless
the
he was saving
would.
Something. Good.
Well, he's got about maybe an hour. Now's about a good time to share that. But, yeah, I mean, I was listening to NPR this morning, and they were talking about Nadler was still reaching out to him, or Morning Joe, how Nadler was still reaching out to him for materials. And he's like, you know, can I get back to you? Because I'm
busy.
I'm busy. I'm about to go to prison.
Yeah. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm great. We had a great time with the Pete affair on Friday night, and Happy Traum was great. And we welcome you back, Joe. It's always
oh, thank
it's
you.
Always
it was
good
very
to
nice
get
to
you back.
Be back. I was in Texas. It was very interesting. I went to Austin and Dallas, and went to presidential libraries and.
The Johnson Library is really interesting.
Isn't
yeah.
it?
It's very,
you know, they're all interesting.
They,
yeah,
are.
They are.
They're all interesting.
They peel back, mm-hmm. and the good ones like that, you know, there's some level of, they really show, like a good historian there will show the rise and falls of the man. Yeah.
Have you ever been to Marty Van Buren's?
It doesn't have one, right?
Well, there's a house.
A historic site.
Yeah. Yes. It's around 9H, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
up there at Marty Van Buren. Old Marty.
He's got a tremendous
mark.
Library. It's you know, 4 books and an Agatha Christie novel.
All right. Well, But I have to say,
no, actually, he's got a mutton chops.
When you go, you know, everyone sort of they're like, oh, well, you have the best one right in your backyard with Hyde Park, which
it's
we do.
True. Oh, of course,
right.
Of course,
the first one, and but he started this whole thing.
But Austin is such a great city.
Oh man, it's great.
It's one of those five places I could retire in. In other words, you know, it's just one of those great places.
Beautiful, beautiful city. And, boy, the state capital's gorgeous. We toured the state capital. Also beautiful. All right. Well, let's get on with what's going on here. And, again, we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So we begin with what is going on in Israel. After intense fighting in Gaza, Israel and Palestinians observe a ceasefire. When I originally was looking at this last night, the death toll was escalating, and now Gaza officials say the two-day death toll for Palestinians had reached 22. At least 9 militants and as many civilians were killed on Sunday alone. The civilians included a pregnant woman, a 12-year-old boy, and a 4-month-old girl, according to health officials. Fighting between Israel and Gaza escalated rapidly on Sunday in the worst combat since the last full-blown war in 2014, with Palestinian rocket and missile attacks killing 4 Israeli civilians and Israeli forces taking aim at individual Gaza militants. The Palestinians said early on Monday that they had reached a ceasefire with Israel. That news appeared to be confirmed indirectly when the Israeli military on Monday morning lifted restrictions on citizens living near the border with Gaza. Though schools in affected areas remain closed for the day, the outbreak of violence began on Friday when a sniper wounded 2 Israeli soldiers. Libby, you want first crack? No?
Not really.
Okay.
Okay,
Barry?
I
went first the last time.
Well, I think each of us are, you know, Joe, you're excluded from this club, but, you know, you've got 3 Jewish people sitting on the panel this morning, and, you know, we all feel a funniness about doing the commentary. On my side, I think the Israelis have done plenty of things that have, you know, enraged the Palestinians, and I think that's not good. On the other hand, clearly this one was started by the Palestinians, and how do we know that? Because the United Nations, which has not been exactly friendly towards Israel, has said, pointed the finger squarely at the Palestinians for having started this.
Yeah,
so,
and this, you're right, Joe, and this has, Alan, this has escalated since obviously there was some quiet years, but the Palestinians there, the concern is that area is now being dictated by Hamas, the Israeli militant group, and so, you know, they fire off, and it doesn't take much for there to be this tinderbox of you know what somebody had spoken a couple of years ago. There was just some lightning that went off, and somebody thought there was shots fired.
Right.
The next thing you know, somebody is firing, and then you got a couple of missiles are going. And it doesn't take much for the place to just go, you know,
so what about
escalating.
The opposite of that, where we have a ceasefire this morning? What leads to that, and what can ensure that it lasts at least longer than a few hours?
Well, if you ask Netanyahu, his idea is for everything that they do, we have to do it 10 times over. And, of course, nobody wants that to happen, especially the Palestinians. Now, the Palestinian leadership, the Hamas leadership, may not care. But Netanyahu's answer is we're going to meet this, and we're going to meet it as outstandingly, if that's the right word, or outrageously as we possibly can.
Yeah, there's some economics that are driving this.
There's a lot.
You know, certainly, you know, it appeared as though Israel was going to allow for goods to go through. And there is, it's a big shipping port area in Gaza. There are folks, innocent folks there who are, you know, economically hurting. And so part of the deal was that Israel was going to allow the goods to go through. And then there was a question, though, would would arms be going through? And there's such a level of distrust there that any time there seems to be some cooperation, and I think in the last couple of months, part of it was ratcheted up was the Israeli elections. And, mm-hmm. Netanyahu won on being a forceful leader and taking, being more of a warmonger. And that probably had not helped the situation any.
Hmm.
Look, this is a government that, like our government here, believes in ruling with a fist. They're really unwilling to sit down and really negotiate. But on the other hand, Hamas and Hezbollah and there's a new group now, will not the Palestinian Islamic Jihad will not recognize Israel's right to exist. So there's this natural tension here. Do you sit down with people and negotiate with people who don't recognize your right to exist?
Say they want to drive you into the scene.
Right. I mean, it's really a difficult situation. And I do think Israel has a right to exist. I do, however, think that Israel needs to recognize that this will just continue the killing, continue the fighting, and continue the bad PR that Israel is getting on the world stage.
On the other hand, Libby, you just said that if your leadership, the Arab leadership or the Hamas leadership, says drive them into the sea and nothing else will do, then what kind of a deal can you come up with?
I know.
Yeah. And I mean, it's hard for us here to really fully appreciate. It would be like living here and the folks in Vermont saying, and literally that close, people in Vermont saying, we just don't see New York's need to exist. And so,
like Alabama, not.
Yeah, but I'm saying that in terms of the close proximity, that's
joke.
That's right there.
Right. Joke alert.
Joke alert.
Yeah.
When we look at this, the situation, though, and when these stories come, it's the brutality of young kids,
right? It's the brutality on both sides.
I mean, it's obviously violence in any form is awful, but it is
right. Brutality, I mean, it's brutality on both sides. They they have the Palestinians and the jihadists. They have folks who will strap themselves full of bombs and get onto a bus and blow up a bus of young Israeli folks, and the Israelis will retaliate. Now they said it's targeted, but
The only saving grace with this was both sides. As horrific as the maybe total of 30 people who dead, both sides were able to call almost a timeout. And it reaches that point where it doesn't escalate to where we can be having hundreds of dead. But eventually, these intermittent timeouts, which both sides agree to, seem to be shorter and shorter periods. And I think there's the fear and concern that one day no one's going to be saying time out.
Right. And the rhetoric just keeps getting ratcheted up and ratcheted up. And whether the rhetoric is true or not, people think it's true. And it's just, it's incendiary.
And then, of course, you don't know who the third party players are. So, for example, we know that we're having, and I'm sure Joe's going to handle this today with us, but the Iranians, have always played an insidious role when it came to the Palestinians. And it is interesting that whoever called the timeout must have known that there were other players within the Palestinian community who had started this, so that's tough.
And that goes back centuries. I mean, you had the former, Soviet Union and America,
right.
And so both there were bigger bodies on both sides who were either pushing for peace or, nudging escalation. Particularly when the region was so forth with oil. And so it's not anymore, but yet there is still that territorial issue. And if you're Israel, you're looking across at people who really just don't believe you should exist. And Israel feels pressure as to, you've got to open up borders so they can get arms. And Israel's like, we open up borders, where does that end?
You know, somebody just mentioned, you mentioned the Russians. So that was interesting because, you know, we just went through this wonderful thing with Pete Seeger. Their biggest hit was Senna. You know, Goodnight Irene, and on the other side was Senna Senna. Israel was a socialist
dream.
A socialist country dream. And Pete loved that. But of course, when the Russians changed, so did a lot of the leftist community in the country. And I think the Russians were the first. I think we were the second, but I think the Russians were the first to recognize Israel. I may be wrong about that, but I think I'm right. Yeah. So it's fascinating to see how the international politics, and you were right to point that out, Barry, follow these things.
But you know, what's interesting, there was just a new poll that came out, the American Muslim poll. They do an annual survey of U.S. faith communities, the Institute of Social Policy and Understanding in D.C. And Jews have the lowest level of Islamophobia nationally, and it's the white evangelicals who have the highest. And yet...
What do you make of that?
Well, what I make of it is that we understand what it is to be hated. And so, and the majority of Jews in this country, when you take the aggregate, are reform or conservative and are a little more to the left. Yet the media portrays the Jewish community mostly as the more ultra-Orthodox. And so they're considered to be the bellwether, which just isn't true. And that the white evangelicals are the ones who are ratcheting up the anti-Islamophobia, the anti-Semitism. And yet the anti-Israel, anti-Zionist rhetoric, there's a very, very, very fine line between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. We see it played out in this country and across the world.
Now, I know we got to go, except for break, except that it's important to remember that the American Jewish community is not as one.
Oh,
with,
no kidding.
With the Israelis.
I mean, look who, and not as one, but Trump went to speak to the Jewish Republican group, you know, and left everyone out of the room other than those folks because they agree with him.
All right, we are going to take a break, and you timed that beautifully, Libby. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Barry Lewis all here. And we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We will be right back after this short break with news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters. We have a couple. We welcome yours. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org.
So Gregory from Rhinebeck writes, Alan, please elaborate. Oh, oops, sorry about that.
That's all right.
Please elaborate on your statement that Israel has done plenty of things to enrage the Palestinians. What things? Oh, come on. We can start to talk about them. But, you know, that is a place that you keep taking West Bank and other settlements where really every time you turn around, it seems there's an approach to doing that and to making that part of Israel. And also the Palestinians need to get things through their borders, which you can't get. And the Israelis have been very careful about that. So those are a few of them.
I mean, I don't know. I think you think about history and how, you know, Lincoln after the Civil War was trying to work with the South, and you think about, you know, Roosevelt after World War II realized that building up Europe is what was going to help America, and you know maybe it's so far out there, but you think of Israel after the 67 War, and you know cooler heads prevailing, going, okay, you win the war. But now, to maintain peace, you have to work with the side that you beat, and I think there's always been that struggle there.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? No. Another Roger writes, team I worry about Libby's negative comments about Netanyahu. For the longest time, I dismissed the claims of a rise in anti-Semitism as just fodder against our president. However, I now believe that anti-Semitism is being masked as anti-Zionism. We can disagree with Israel's politics, but we need to be very careful. They are the only democracy in the Middle East. While there are incidents of Israel's lapses in trust, spying, the USS Liberty, et cetera, we need to be protective of global democracy, and that's Roger from Warwick.
Oh, I think I answered that at the end, but that's okay.
Matt says, if you look up new footage of Israel from 40 years ago, it looks the same as today. Aren't you sick of watching people fight over the same piece of sand that the invisible sky god purportedly promised them before we had running water? Enough is enough. And dear panel, says Bob from Schenectady, this weekend's situation in Gaza began after Israeli military snipers shot people who were protesting at the border on Friday. Afterwards, there was retaliation by the Palestinians. Not according to the United Nations, by the way.
Yeah, it was the other way. Morning.
Yeah. Palestinians have suffered killings by Israeli military personnel sniping children, journalists, medical personnel, and disabled people on a regular basis. But U.S. media rarely tells these stories. Thankfully, there are alternative media sources who are willing to educate people about what is happening in Gaza, and that's Bob from Schenectady.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. In a reversal, President Trump said that Bob Mueller should not testify before Congress.
Remember when he said he should? Shocking.
No.
Absolutely shocking.
President Trump said Sunday that special counsel Robert Mueller should not testify before Congress, reversing course from his previous position that the decision is up to Attorney General William Barr. Bob Mueller should not testify, Trump said in an afternoon tweet. No redos for the Dems. I honestly don't know what that means. Trump also insisted that Mueller's 448-page report found no collusion and no obstruction, overstating the conclusions of the nearly two-year investigation. A redacted version of the document has been released. Congressional Democrats are battling with Barr to get the full report deadline today.
He just loves to get under their skin. I mean, I don't know if, you know, I really don't think that the president has a game plan on these things. I think there reaches a point in the weekend, you know, when he wasn't tweeting about the Kentucky Derby, he decides to tweet about, Barr and Mueller testifying. And I don't think there's a long game plan. He just hears the rhetoric over the course of the weekend and figures, okay, maybe he should.
It's 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's rolling over in his bed, and he's doing what people do. He's beginning to think of the worst possible thing that could happen. And he's worried about what Mueller has that he may say to the Congress under specific questioning, and he doesn't want him up there.
And he knows what Mueller has.
He knows a great deal about what Mueller has, and he is also worried that Mueller will say something that did not come out in the report in response to a specific question, and that he's doomed as a result of it, and that politically doomed, of course. And that is what his fear is, and that's why he tweets this.
And that's why he's suing Deutsche Bank,
Citibank. No, Capital One. I'm sorry.
Which was, we watched the Saturday Night Live last night, and Michael Che really went after the fact that it was also Citizen One. But that's why he's suing these banks, so that they won't tell his secrets, his financial secrets, if they're called to testify.
Ironically and amazingly, he's still at 46% now. You know, and
he went back up to 46.
He went back up to 46. And again, it's between a 42, 41
and 30s.
It was in the high 30s. Yeah. But, you know, and back. So, yeah, the most recent was 46. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, the disapproval rating is still 51. But, you know, after all the recent testimony, nothing has changed. Nothing has swayed certainly his base. And while I think there is a concern as to what Mueller might testify to, I think there's a growing frustration with the American public. You know, I think there are certainly a percentage of folks, Democrats.
You mean by the American public?
By the American public, that they want to move on, that they don't want another. I think there's a strong, certainly, group of Democrats who want this, but there are other folks in this country like, let's move on. I don't want another hearing, another testimony.
There's another part of this, and that is the economy. I mean, when somebody looks at this very strong economy, these very strong work numbers, you know, I hear the liberal commentators, and I consider myself a liberal, you know, saying, well, you know, what's going on here is that it's not really that solid an economy and undermining it. People don't have a taste for that. They just know, do I have a job? Does my kid have a job?
And how's my 401k
doing? That's right.
Right.
You know, and you can, you
and
know,
that's
you can,
your 6%, by
right.
the way.
And you can, you know, argue that, yes, some of these folks have to work 2-3 jobs and they don't have the insurance and they haven't gotten the wage increases as the executives have. But I'm sure there are a lot of Democrats who are trying to figure out, you know, those 2 dozen who are running for president are now trying to figure out what kind of lane do I get into if the economy stays strong.
Sure.
Because that is the lane that, you know, he can say, this is what I told you. Stick with me and we'll have a strong economy.
Yep.
And the rest be damned.
Right. And it doesn't matter if I talk about grabbing women by the you-know-whats and all over, because people don't really care about that.
How does this affect your life?
Yeah.
And because right. all those people say, well, you know, we get the line. They all do it. They're all corrupt. Yeah, he. You know what I hear from, you know, readers is, yes, I don't like what he said. I don't agree with what he said. I wouldn't want him maybe to be, you know, have a drink with him. I don't like the guy, but and their but has not changed, which is, but look what he's doing with the economy.
Sure.
I just want to clarify the polls. There's an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll that was released on Sunday that shows 46% of Americans approve of Trump's job performance. And then they have a line in here, which you have to help me out with. It says about the same as the 43% who approved a month ago. 3 percentage points seems different to me.
But that's probably the margin of error.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
maybe.
Well.
Okay, but you always have the margin of error.
Well, let's put it this way. If he gets 5 points more,
yes,
he wins the election.
And there is what, you know, and there is what happened in 2016. You know, where were those 5 points? You know, was it, you know, poor campaigning by Hillary? Was it Russian influence?
Or was it the gerrymander?
Was it gerrymandering? And if each one of those is a 1.5 to 2%, you know, it doesn't have to be all those things.
And in the what is it, 538? Is that what it is? The
538.
In their collection of the polls, they have him at 42%.
Yeah. So again, you think about everything that has been splattered, and it really hasn't taken effect. And yeah, I think the economy, and I think if he appears to be strong in terms of the military, which, you know, there's certainly, he's got some good strong hawks, you know, in his cabinet now, and he's got,
and
the
he's
folks.
He's lost a whole bunch of good
right, but he's also got the folks who obviously Pompeo and others who are just going to say whatever he wants them to say, Barr, and they're the perfect, and Giuliani. These are the perfect folks who are giving the administration's message.
The cover.
So, well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll talk tariffs, we'll talk Venezuela, we may even talk about the Kentucky Derby. All of that and much more coming up after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan Chartok is here, Barry Lewis and Libby Post, and we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org.
Joe, can I just say, and Alan, to who's ever in charge, thank you for—
Joe's in charge.
Okay.
No, Alan's in charge.
Well, to both of you, I think, you know—
thank Libby, too.
Well, yeah, Libby, thank
you.
I'm
really
in charge. Unlike NPR that has changed their intro music.
Oh, what do you think of that?
You know, I'm a traditionalist, and I heard it. And yes, there is a foundation of the
a
old
strain
one,
of it.
A stream. But I guess it's the why. You know, why did it need to have a pulsing sound?
I'm going to tell you why.
I'm curious.
I've been around for a few years, and I know one of my great theorems or laws of public administration and politics is that because NPR changes its leadership very often. I don't know what happens.
The music hasn't changed in 40 years.
But what'd you say?
That music hasn't changed in like 40
years. Right. So you don't get credit for something that anybody else has done. So when you come in, you make a change. And you say, now, the other thing is that they're obviously looking for younger listeners because the average age of the NPR listeners skews older.
Right.
And so I think that's part of it. So that heavy beat.
So is the thought that now that so the young folks will listen to the new jingle, and as soon as the anchors start talking about the news, they'll turn off.
Well, you know, I think you make a very good point.
I mean, the only point I always say, because people often will comment positively or negatively about our theme music or our bumper music or whatever. People will key in on it, and that's fine. The argument I have is that out of the entire 3-hour program that we do, it plays for about 90 seconds. So if you like it, awesome. And if you don't, that's only a minute and a half.
Right.
Well, here's the thing that bugs me. And
it's the same thing with NPR. Yeah.
And people will write letters to me about this. We give a tremendous amount of money to National Public Radio. WAMC does. It's, I believe, upward of $800,000 now out of our $7 million budget. Those folks have asked us to give them a 60% raise in what we give them. 60%.
Well, somebody had to pay for the new composer.
Well, that's right. That's my point.
Those things aren't cheap. You know, you've got sheet music, and you got those. They have those specialized pens where you can write on that stuff.
Don't get me started. But you take a look at somebody like Ian Pickus, our wonderful news director, who works his head off, or Joe, or all the people who are here, and they pay their people. Wazulas. They are, you know, as in...
Perhaps up the
wazulas. That's what I meant. I was wondering whether I'd get into trouble for it. And
and
you were so right, Barry. They paid somebody to... They probably had four committees to do this.
I just... It's
kind of
like...
Oh, my God, the layout. You should have seen the paperwork going back and forth. They've been talking about they had test committees. Parliamentary politics of this theme was amazing.
You know, it's kind of like changing a logo with something. It's because somebody woke up. You're right, Alan. Somebody woke up one day and said, you know, if we only had new music, that would draw listeners.
And
in newspapers, we do it all the time. Somebody comes in and they get, you know, if we only were designed differently, more people would read us. And generally, that's not the problem. Right.
Two things. One, Duchess Meghan of Sussex has given birth to a boy. That is breaking news.
Mazel tov. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So we wanted to mention that. When we went on the air, it was news that she was in labor. Now Britain has a new royal baby. Meghan, Duchess of Sussex, and Prince Harry had a boy, the first interracial child in the monarchy's recent history.
They named the kid?
No. Not yet.
No. So, there's that news. But back to the theme for
important.
A second. Thank you.
but you're right, because, you know, that's what Americans are concerned about.
It's breaking news. Everything on me is all buzzing and twittering and over this. But back to the theme.
The son is seventh in line.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a long way.
Well, you know, the Queen's 93 now, 94. Right. So, you know, imagine you're Prince Charles. You've only been waiting for...
Oh, forever. It was like...
Well, I think a lot of us are concerned that Prince Charles will go before the Queen.
Are you really concerned about that?
Very much.
I don't wish him, bad. But she's just it's amazing.
She's the Energizer Bunny of royalty.
Well, you see that. Also, she became queen at such a young age.
And the mother lived forever.
Yeah.
Well, her mother lived forever.
Right. Well, there's strong genes in the family.
Strong genes and good tea.
You know, right.
And good teeth? Did you say?
No, good tea.
Oh.
Yeah, good teeth too. Well, now, how old is Prince? Because Prince Philip is up. I mean, he's older, right?
He's older, and he's not well.
He said he recently said he was retiring.
Yeah.
Don't you need to have a job?
Yeah, but then he was out driving around.
Well, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, well, he's not doing that anymore.
No. 97. Oh, there he is. He out there. Prince Harry is out giving the news.
I like Prince Harry. He's a cut-up.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to forgive him for wearing that Nazi uniform that time in the party.
Yeah. Well, he learned bad. From that.
Yeah, we all do when you're young. Well, I've never done
that. Yeah.
Your mother would have killed you.
I was saying something like, you know, well, we all do silly things, but that's where I draw the line.
A little bit beyond a silly
thing. Dear WAMC panel, can't you be serious?
Well, congratulations to the royal family. Lovely, lovely news. That's the good news. We were talking about the theme, and I'd be interested to hear what listeners have to say about the theme as well. It's interesting. What the thing I don't understand is if you had the same theme for 40 years. You know, what's another 10, 15 years with it?
But, and if you were going to change it, wouldn't you...
Change it?
Why don't you change it? But obviously they felt as though there's an element of this that we need to maintain.
So you put in the rock beat behind it.
But have like that pulsing electronic sound to it.
Right.
And I would be curious. I'm sure there'll be some pushback.
People don't like change.
I really like Prince Harry.
All right.
But on another note, the Democrats are preparing to hold William Barr in contempt. That just broke.
Okay. So is that going to happen?
Well,
and what does that mean? They're preparing to hold him in contempt.
This is because he's not complying with the Mueller report.
So he's not going to
be held in contempt.
So he's going to be held in contempt, and they're going to serve him papers or something like that.
You make a very good point. They did that, I believe. I meant to look it up, but I believe they did that with the when the Democrats were in control. They did it with the IRS commissioner. Because she wouldn't release certain stuff. And nothing ever happened. No. They hold them in contempt. They don't put them in jail, although I believe there is a place to put somebody in jail in the House of Representatives.
Is that true?
It's kind of like one of those places at the stadium when they arrest people for drinking.
Yeah, it's like
too
down
much.
In the basement. Yeah. You ever watch Chicago PD? It's like that.
But this is the brilliance of Trump, is you tell your people no, and he knows... There is no, we all think, he's gonna be subpoenaed and he'll be held in contempt. Well, okay, and now what?
Well,
he served papers, and he's not gonna lose his job, and
eventually
maybe in a couple of years it goes to a high court. But that's where we're gonna go now. There's gonna be a legal procedure.
Supreme Court, yes.
Because the Senate's not gonna move on this.
So Lois Lerner.
Oh no, the Senate. Doesn't have to. Either house can hold in contempt. You don't need both houses.
Right, but so, what I'm saying is the Senate's not going to move on anything to push for him to comply to appear or anything
on the contrary.
That. So I mean, really legally, there isn't much that the House can do other than what they've done.
No, but if you roll back time, and it was 40 years ago, for the Attorney General to be held in contempt of the House, there would have been calls for his resignation or her resignation, and it would have been taken seriously, and there would have been political consequences. This president has thrown all notion of political consequences out the window.
Okay, so what is
Barr? Because he doesn't listen to anybody.
So what is Barr? What are the other guys thinking at their 2 o'clock in the morning? That they're going down in history as two of the most contemptible characters, in history.
I think that they're thinking we're right.
You do?
Yes. Absolutely.
You think when he was lying to that congressional committee and parsing those words the other day and saying, I don't know what this word means or that word means, that he thought he was right?
I think he thinks he's smarter than everybody and he can just manipulate it all.
But I think that is the question so many have asked, because you have people like Barr who worked in previous administrations who, on the whole, and what we've heard in the last 2 years are people who are working for the president are there because this way they can kind of, control and sort of navigate the administration ship so it doesn't hit an iceberg. But you think about these people and you kind of wonder, they have to realize that their reputation, at some point, there is no Trump. I mean, whether it's 2 years or four years.
That's your point.
And the question is, none of these people, as Michael Cohen does a press conference before he walks to prison, and
he's doing
others,
it right now,
right? And mm-hmm. others who have in prison, you shake your head and you kind of wonder, what do they think their life is going to be like, their reputation forever,
or what are their grandchildren going to be hearing about Grandpa?
I mean,
he was a crook.
What was Barr's incentive to what was Barr's incentive?
To become Attorney General?
Because he had been, not just to become Attorney General, but to become Attorney General and suddenly become a lackey for Trump.
It's all about the policy that they get to realize. It's all about choice. It's all about racism and...
So he gets back his 15
yes,
minutes?
Yes, yes. It's all
no,
about...
that may be it, Barry. It may be
he gets back his 15 minutes.
Yes. I think... I truly believe that's what it was always about. That's why he wrote that letter, you know, the famous audition letter to Trump. You know, once the fickle finger of... you know, fame hits you. You may want it. You may regret not having it anymore.
I mean, you look at guys like. Oh, I mean, I think, and you see more interviews of Chris Christie, and there seems to be a guy who regretted.
Regretted what?
Christie getting involved with Trump. Then you have a guy like Giuliani who has
because it didn't work out.
Right,
yeah.
And now it's gotten worse.
Right.
So he,
only because of the son-in-law who, because Christie did the right thing and put the father in prison.
Right.
Right.
But then you look at Giuliani again, who just it doesn't matter.
Oh, what a tangled web.
Yeah,
Giuliani.
But these guys really do think that they're going to be in charge for a very long time, and that he's going to win re-election. They're delusional. He's going to win re-election, and they'll be able to take over the courts. And so their version of America, the 1950s version of America, where women are barefoot and pregnant and the man comes home and provides for the family, is what's going to be. And that's what drives them. All the policy issues around...
Who's the them in this case? You mean not Trump? What drives Trump's
no,
is
but
Trump.
Barr
right.
and...
Trump has no ideology to any of this stuff.
But Barr and the people behind Trump, the McDonnell, you know, the Republicans in the Senate, the old white men in the
McConnell,
Senate.
McConnell, you mean?
McConnell, yeah. Right, the old white men in the Senate. This is
what
they
want. Yeah, that's what they want. No question.
That's what they want.
But I agree with Barry that it's that 15 minutes.
You know?
That they want back. I think that's what it is.
That might be true, too.
All right. We are going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll go to letters, and we welcome yours, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We will return after this short break. A lively panel on this Monday morning. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. Sorry.
Yeah.
WAMC. Don't send it to the medical college. WAMC.org. And we love your letters. We have a couple that Alan is going to read for us. They're all over the place. We talked about a lot of stuff.
Yes. And here's one that says, anti-Semitism from Anthony. The more I read and learn about the Holocaust, the more I'm convinced that Jewish people need to stand strongly up to the world, which is trying to destroy them a second time. That's from Anthony. And then we've heard from Sherry in Tynemouth, Vermont. I am not sure this is on the agenda today, but Alan is right. NPR has too much money. The new Morning Edition music is awful. I read in the New York Times they did research and spent money to develop it. I can't believe NPR has so much extra money they can waste it on changing its signature music. I've never gotten used to the firing of Bob Edwards. Some people have long memories. Thank goodness for the local sports in the morning. It actually says mooning. And it may be profound, but I don't know. It says in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's from Sherry. Sherry, they may have too much money, but they want more. They want our money, everything we get. They have a proposal now, that they should be allowed to come in and ask our members for money directly to NPR. Can you believe that? And how do we pay them the $1.5 million they're now asking for? It's unbelievable. Where are we going to get it? Oh, boy. Anyway, don't get me started. And that's from Sherry. And then
Sherry did.
Sherry's just a quick point. There is an article. I mean, the NPR theme change made the New York Times.
Yeah, the Times
changed.
And you can click on and listen to the old and the new.
Well,
yes.
I think it might go the way of New Coke.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Or the NBC logo when they decided, you know, to have a logo and not realizing that was, I think, the same brand for. Was it a college or was that N that they?
Oh yeah, right.
Nabisco. Was it Nabisco?
Nabisco.
Nabisco logo.
Alan will remember this.
Yes.
But they had a guy for a long, long time, like for a billion years, who did the underwriting announcements.
Right.
And then they fired him, and then they hired a woman who. And what was her pay? The word that was pajamas, right?
Pajamas. But they wanted them. That company wanted it said that way. No, but the woman was so bad that everybody complained, and they got another, another woman,
and that went the way of New Coke. Yeah, that didn't last long. So we'll see how long. Make a good point.
And that's not the only place that that happens. They got her because they wanted to attract younger people to listen to the station, obviously. So now my favorite channel, which is the old movie channel,
TCM.
They have these people, these two, a woman and a man, young man, on the weekend. They're so bad that they defy description.
Well, I think the idea is right. Somehow along the lines, and it's being in the media, there's this, if we make something look...
Hachi-tachi.
Yeah, and we'll have younger folks presenting it. Well, obviously they'll say, look, there's a young person telling me about the news.
No, telling me about a film from 1934.
From 1934, right. So, CBS is now dealing with it this morning, where they're changing the anchor for the network news and all that stuff.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, so Bernadette says, I thought it was April Fool's Day this morning when I heard NPR was replacing Morning Edition's iconic theme song with a poor excuse for a ringtone.
Okay, so we have one in the category.
I like that.
Can we play the new theme?
Do you have them?
I probably not.
Because I don't have
please,
it.
Get on your computer.
And so Bernadette says, please, what can be done? Well, you can write to here. You can write to me, Alan, at WAMC.org, and I'll pass them right on.
So if anybody sends you all their letters, you'll send it out to them.
Yeah, sure.
So you encourage them to email or send you those letters.
That's what I was trying to do.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to do. Yes. And Daniel says, dear panel, our president, Cameron, this is a very interesting spelling of president, our parenthesis P, capital P, N-paren, president thinks his only hope for re-election is to be impeached. He and Barr are doing all they can to force the Dems to impeach. That's how screwed up a situation we are in, and that's from Daniel. Now, that may be true. That may be true that as long as they have the Senate, they can encourage to impeach.
Right.
But if they didn't have the Senate, that'd be another whole story.
I think there's another part where he and I'm curious to get into the mind of Donald Trump, that as long as he is president, he won't be indicted.
Right.
And so what's,
that's right. Oh, yeah.
What he knows is what's saving him, is what would happen those next 4 years, because he knows he's facing some, certainly criminal indictment.
Well, it's all
from
getting,
the Southern District or some other location.
It's all getting very difficult here. One of them is that the Senate, which could go Democratic, they're finding almost everybody who could be a good candidate is running for president and have no chance of being president. And so that really is so annoying, because you could take the Senate, but you can't take it if you don't have good candidates running. Don't you see? That's why you just got to hope that people will put pressure on these folks to drop out earlier rather than later and run for the Senate. I mean, Beto could win in Texas, although he didn't win the last time. His name is even more known now. It could be a real anti-Trump year, and he could win. So
he might still do it. It's still early. These people will start dropping out.
I mean, with two dozen almost, you're going to have, there's only so much, contribution money. There's only so much time, and suddenly now even the front runners are finding a crowded front runner field.
You
can easily name 10 front runners.
I don't know. Did you talk about de Blasio entering on Friday?
Oh, God.
No, what did he say?
No, well, de Blasio is jumping in the race.
It's ridiculous.
I didn't know whether that was discussed. But so what possible benefit could that have other than—
Name recognition.
Right, name recognition, because he's facing
taking off the governor?
Well, he's facing term limit, and it doesn't help. It really doesn't help in terms of name recognition, next job, gathering money. He can start gathering
money.
It's
ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Does he think he can? No, I don't even think he thinks he can win. But there's a motive to get his name out there, and how he can maybe help position another candidate.
Barry, here's the downside. The downside is a guy wins to becomes mayor of New York City, one of the biggest jobs in the country. Yeah. You can't convince that guy he can't be president. He thinks in his own head he can.
Everybody who's a mayor or governor of New York thinks that could be president.
By the way, you don't see Andrew jumping in, that's for sure. So I don't know. Anyway, let's go on.
All right.
Jonathan says, testifying before Congress, can he prevent Mueller from testifying when he, Mueller, is a private citizen? Jonathan Woodstock. First of all, he is not yet a private citizen. He still works for the Justice Department.
Right, Barr's his boss.
Yeah, right. But let's assume in a few days he's not anymore. Could a president invoking executive privilege say, I don't want you because it's violative of executive privilege to do it? Some of the newspapers seem to be buying that. I don't know. It's hard to believe. I think he's going to do it. And I think he knows that it's his reputation for the rest of his life.
Well, after sending the letter to Barr and seeing how that plays out, you would think if you're Robert Mueller, you have an opportunity now to, for once and for all, you know, share with the American public what you found in those 2 years, and realizing that it has not been presented the way you thought it was going to, that you would want, you'd be compelled to do so. Use this opportunity.
Well, anyway, Mark in Latham writes, do you think that A.G. Barr's summary conclusion of the Mueller report, no collusion, no obstruction, has emboldened Trump? Well, first of all, he didn't say no obstruction.
But it did embolden Trump.
Yes.
And Republicans.
Why do you think he did not discuss Russian interference in 2016 election with Putin? Because it benefited him. Why would he want to discourage Russian interference in the future? Even though he may not collude with Russia, he benefits from their intentions and does nothing to stop it. Isn't that enough, Mark from Latham? Amy from Huntington, Massachusetts says, isn't the support of regime change in Venezuela in opposition to our outrage at Russian interference in our elections? No, because I don't think so. I mean, we have a president who is in bed with the Russians, so I don't get that. Anyway, and let's say to Anthony, panel, our great Constitution is turning out to be a paper tiger. Where are the rules? Where are the regulations? Trump is on his way to blowing up our democracy. Our Constitution is a joke, and Congress, both houses, are nothing more than a conglomerate of court jesters. Anthony. Okay. And then we heard from Donna, who said in Warwick, can you shed any light on the recent revelation that Boeing knew all about the MAX jet deadly problem? I've just heard mentions on the news, such travesty of beautiful lives carelessly lost. My daughter, who worked with the UN food program, had dear colleagues among those on the African flight. Longtime listener, loves you all. That's from Donna in Warwick. Well, you know, we are hearing more and more all the time that they
Boeing could not have handled this any worse. News getting out that they had known for at least a year about the problems with the plane, and that's going to be, you know, that's going to be their downfall in many ways. You know, you can't know about this.
How can it be their downfall when they're the richest corporation in America, or one of them?
But their stock price just is in the toilet.
Yeah.
And so,
good time to buy, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it's going to be very difficult for them to come back from this. And if
airlines are not going to buy their planes,
right? But you know what they'll end up doing? They'll rebrand, just like Philip Morris did. They'll rebrand, and they'll have a new name, and people won't remember.
Okay, here we go. And panel, aren't Dems really trying to discredit Barr ahead of further investigations? And that's from Katie. And dear panel, says Joan, stop asking why. Barr and almost everyone else in the GOP are dominionists. They do not care if they are considered right. It is about the power of Christian dominionists that they will never give up that power. That's why they, parenthesis, not Trump, picked Pence as VP.
Mm-hmm.
Joan from Glenmont.
She's absolutely right.
And we heard from Russell in Petersham. I find the phrase "old white men" extremely offensive. So do I, by the way. If any other group was indicated above, I believe WAMC would be all over this. Other than that, I enjoy the show today, Russell. Well, Russell is an old white man. I couldn't agree with you more.
So thank you, Alan, for that.
All right, let's move on to other things. We go to China and tariffs. and what is happening with the stock market this morning, which is interesting. So the president threatened China with more tariffs ahead of trade talks and of the quote-unquote final trade talks. They emboldened by a strong American economy and wary of criticism that an evolving trade deal with China would not adequately benefit the United States. Donald Trump threatened on Sunday to impose more punishing tariffs on Chinese goods in an attempt to force additional concessions on a final agreement. Mr. Trump, in a tweet, warned that he would increase tariffs on $200 billion in Chinese goods at the end of this week and shortly impose levies on hundreds of billions of dollars of additional imports. Dozens of high-level Chinese officials are arriving in Washington this week for what was expected to be a final round of negotiations toward a trade agreement, at least in principle.
The art of the deal. Threaten.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a few things.
But is it a smart one to do days before? Is this a good negotiating ploy? I mean, he's done it a couple of times.
Well, yeah, he does. He thinks it is.
And he doesn't realize that. And he doesn't seem to realize the implications of what those tariffs could mean to American consumers.
Unless,
and everyone, including Republicans, are telling him that. That the cost of washing machines, the cost of so many items go sky high when we put those imports in.
But the people that he talks to, the people who, you know, the Steve Mnuchins of the world, the people, all the, they don't care because they can afford it.
Libby, but the Mnuchins even realize it's not a smart
Libby,
move.
It's not going to happen.
Oh, I know.
It's not going to happen. But this is why I want to advise
everybody, and I'm not a financial advisor, and I have no right to do this. If the stock market falls 400 or 500 points today, good time to buy, because obviously, when he changes his mind, it's going up through the roof again, which it always does. Now, the reason I may not be right is because I may not be right. In other words, you may really think of it.
I mean, China has stolen intellectual properties. They've been a long time problem for this government. There's no question about it. But 3 days before you do this, to throw these tariffs out there, he doesn't, the implications. And China also knows he's the boy who cries wolf.
Well, that's
because this
the
has
thing.
Been. This, so China
done,
says,
he's
yeah,
done this before.
He's done this before. So let him.
So
let him,
they'll wait for him to blink.
Right. They'll wait for him to blink.
They'll wait for him to
and,
blink.
And, he will. Somewhere along the lines, and they'll work out something by Tuesday, Wednesday.
Right. And he'll come out to the Rose Garden and say, look, I'm the hero, and I saved you all millions and billions of dollars because we came to this agreement.
We got a great deal.
Such a deal.
Dow Jones currently down 256, 257.
Yeah, piece of change.
All right.
It's early.
You know what that means? That means people are not taking it as seriously as we had thought.
Which is good, but it also so much begs the question: Why do you do it? Why would you even risk? Why do you even throw it out there?
You know why he wants to show
off.
It's deflection.
It's deflection from Mueller's going to testify. It's deflection from Bill Barr. It's deflection.
Well, that's a possibility, but I don't think that's what it is. I think the fact is this is the way he's always conducted his business, and he still intends to do that. You challenge, you threaten, you don't pay
before you go into a negotiation. This is I'll here it is. We're about to talk, and let me tell you right now: if you don't go with what we want.
Right.
You'll pay the price.
Well, for anyone who is interested, we only have about a minute and a half, but on Saturday afternoon, the weirdest thing happened at the Kentucky Derby. For the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby, the winner of the race was disqualified, taken down, and then I believe a 65-1 shot. Was the winner of the race. Obviously, it cost a lot of people a lot of money. The president weighed in and said that this was a sign of political correctness. No. I'm not sure how
that
works.
What does that mean?
But it whatever. And but I think in a larger context, it shows a sport that is really unraveling, a sport that it had to shut down in Santa Anita in California, a sport that is having a great deal because of a rash of deaths of horses.
A sport that, Joe, I'm sorry to interrupt, but a sport that we are told is coming to Great Barrington. The Boston racetrack, which had to have closed down some stuff, was sending it to Great Barrington.
And you got a racetrack coming to Great Barrington?
We have a racetrack. And we have a racetrack coming to Great Barrington. Pick up your copy of the Berkshire Eagle this morning, and you can read all about it.
Well,
Joe, I think basically what they said at the races is as tough as it was for the stewards, the judges to make this call, that this was a call that they would have made at any other kind of race midweek. And
Bill
so they
Mott
did the
that,
right
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
That this was the – they realized, you know, the gravity, the gravity of their decision, but that they made what was the proper decision.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan Chartok, Barry Lewis, Libby Post. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. We will be back after this short break.